Salve Maria. Another moved the house on Itacolomi Street. Dona Lucilia deeply shared her son's sorrow, provoked by the series of events, but this in no way lessened her hope in the Sacred Heart of Jesus. After all, she surely thought, the ways of Providence are mysterious, and God will not fail to bring good from these trials. At least Dr. Plinio would now have more time to dedicate to the intellectual life and apostolate, and to spend more time with his mother, who sorely missed her dear filial whenever he went away. And this is the way things went. Dr. Plinio assumed the history of civilization, chair at the famous University College of the Faculty of Law of the University of São Paulo, and went on to assume analogous positions in the faculties of philosophy, sciences, and letters at São Bento College and Sede Sapienza College, both later merged into the Pontifical Catholic University of São Paulo. Dr. Plinio immersed himself in historical studies and Marian congregation activities, and devoted more hours to the Catholic weekly Legionario, of which he had been director since August of 1933, and which in subsequent years would garner international renown. But as the years went by, free time spent with Dona Lucilia would become scarcer. She accepted this with the characteristic resignation of a true Catholic soul. The electoral vicissitudes being over, it was time to either redecorate the house or move to a better residence. Dona Rosé found a good house close to hers and joyfully hastened to tell Dona Lucilia about it. It was a little smaller than the house on Marquês de Itu Street, but the layout was superior, the owner being a man of consummate good taste. The dwelling was perfectly charming, outfitted with beautiful wallpaper and quality stained glass windows. The rent was only marginally higher than what they were paying, an additional 50,000 reais. They decided to move. The new home on 625 Itacolomi Street in the Higienopolis district was much more becoming than the former one, and Dona Lucilia took to it immediately. Dona Rosé saw to the interior decoration, and in short order, everything was perfectly arranged to her mother's liking. Dona Lucilia always adapted her habits to her home's particular ambience. Among the many memories that she kept of her stay at this particular residence was of choosing one of its upstairs areas as a dressing room, and of serenely and decorously taking tea there every afternoon, brought by a faithful Portuguese maid on a silver tray. Dona Lucilia takes care of her sick filial. Without the least disregard for health issues, Dona Lucilia refrained from meddling in the treatment of those who were old enough to look after themselves. Her loving concern for her son would never wane. It would be refined over the years and would come to represent a true balm of relief and encouragement in the midst of the battles that he would wage for Catholic orthodoxy, as the following episode illustrates. One day he awoke feeling very unwell. Dona Lucilia noticed immediately and acquired in her modulated voice, "Filial, you are feeling ill, aren't you?" The affectionate yet direct question let him understand that she knew how he felt and that there was no use hiding it. Dr. Plinio replied with a filial directness that contrasted harmoniously with her motherly gentleness. "My dear, I am sick indeed, but I detest taking medicine. I didn't want to say anything so that you wouldn't ply me with medicines, or worse yet, recommend a special diet. That's why I don't want to say no to you, but above all, why I don't want to say yes." Dona Lucilia was in a tight spot. She wanted to help him, but she did not want to go against his will. Nevertheless, she retained her calm. She stepped closer to his bed and laid her hand on his forehead to check if he had a fever. This simple gesture was itself the first step toward a cure, since her cool and delicate hand conveyed a restorative serenity, reflecting an inner peace that nothing could perturb. "You have a fever," she said. Dr. Plinio feared she would check his temperature next, find it to be 38 degrees or 39 degrees, become alarmed, and prevail upon him take the health measures that he loathed. Sure enough, she left the room with her small and nimble step and was soon back with the dreaded instrument. Dr. Plinio acquiesced and patiently waited as Donna Lucilia marked the time carefully on her watch and then handed the thermometer back to her. Donna Lucilia squinted at it in a dimly lit room, but instead of pronouncing sentence, as she did when he was a boy, she merely said, "Well, my son, what do you want to do?" The specter of torture having vanished, he replied, "My dear, I just want to lie here quietly." So Donna Lucilia brought a chair from her bedroom and sat next to her son's bed and serenely began her prayers. She stayed like this for several hours until the nightfall. Dr. Plinio finally said, "My dear, I'm ravenous. Surely you will want me to eat something. Tell me what you would like and your mother will bring it," was her prompt reply. He told her and she immediately left to prepare the dish herself. She returned with a meal and made a point of serving it personally. After it was over, she said, "Next time, don't hide anything from your mother. She notices but won't impose anything." Thanks to Our Lady's intercession, Providence had granted Dr. Plinio excellent general health, and by the next morning he was better. As soon as he got up, he went to Donna Lucilia's room. "How are you doing, Filial?" And life was back to normal. Many, many years later, when recalling this little episode, Dr. Plinio said that it was only when his mother asked him not to hide anything from her that he realized that for her that minor illness was not a trifle, and that had it worsened, she would have cared for him with boundless zeal until the end. Dr. Plinio concluded, "And if I had died, she probably would have died too. One thing is absolutely certain, she would have preferred to die than to continue living." Two other examples of maternal discernment. Discernment of psychologies was one of the many gifts with which Providence endowed Donna Lucilia for the perfect fulfillment of her mission as a mother and educator. This discernment prompted her to choose a German governess for her children, having noted that the German sense of order and duty would be highly beneficial factors in the formation of her children. This also explains why she did not choose a French governess, despite her heartfelt admiration for France. She similarly knew how to discern among the friends of Dr. Plinio, who were the true ones, from the occasional one that was not. Two episodes highlight this unique gift. Dr. Plinio once invited a young colleague from Catholic circles to dine at his house. Donna Lucilia noticed something peculiar as she discreetly observed the dinner guest. When the young man left, she cautioned her son, "Be careful with that hand. The way he holds his fork is very strange." Perhaps intuitively, Donna Lucilia associated his strange way with a not entirely explicit moral defect. She was thoroughly convinced that France should not be trusted, and as a concerned mother, she alerted Dr. Plinio. Her presentiment was soon confirmed by fact. A while later, this youth betrayed his Catholic colleagues, bringing much grief to Dr. Plinio. On another occasion, Dr. Plinio invited one of his closest friends from the Marian congregations to his home for lunch. While everyone was at table, the telephone rang. The maid stepped in to say that Mr. X was on the telephone to discuss an urgent matter with Dr. Plinio. He interrupted lunch to take the call. The telephone was in an adjacent room, and Donna Lucilia and the visitor followed Dr. Plinio there. The phone call concerned a subject of great importance to the Catholic cause. Donna Lucilia watched in silence with a calm and luminous gaze. Interiorly, she must have been praying to the Sacred Heart of Jesus to enlighten her son in this difficulty. After the phone call, they returned to the table and continued the conversation. When the visitor left, Donna Lucilia asked Dr. Plinio, "Did you notice his reaction while you were speaking on the telephone?" "No, Mother, I was so absorbed in a discussion that I did not pay attention." in a grave tone that revealed the force of her affection for him, she cautioned, "My son, be careful with this friend of yours. Whenever you had a worried look, he became happy. When you gave a good answer to the person on the other end and set things straight, he showed either indifference or dejection. He is not your friend." Not long afterwards, this friend would figuratively stab Dr. Plinio in the back. One might wonder how such a kind person as Dona Lucilia could be alert to evil by means of apparently insignificant details. The fact is that the concept of kindness that had been spread in many circles, especially from the late 1930s onward, differed greatly from the true conception of this virtue taught by the Church. Since this time onward, there has been a tendency to confuse kindness with complacency towards certain forms of evil, the consequence almost always being the obstinate turning of a blind eye to evil, as if it did not exist. Dona Lucilia acted very differently. Her soul admirably brought together kindness with unbreakable firmness of principles, mercy with a keen sense of justice, affability with an entirely serious spirit. This harmonic ensemble of virtues enabled her not infrequently to note the good or evil in persons and situation. Another visit to Aguas de Prata. Until the end of her long life, Dona Lucilia sweetly and submissively bore her painful liver sickness, which often laid her up for days. Besides his ongoing medical treatments, Dr. Mortino always urged his patient to make regular visits to the Aguas de Prata thermal spa, which was gaining renown. Deep down, he likely thought that curatives coming directly from God's hands would bring better results than remedies crafted by imperfect human ingenuity, and principle that Dona Lucilia also stood by. It is certain that during her visits to the city, Dona Lucilia wrote to her children frequently, yet because of the passage of time and the vicissitudes of life, only a few lines of this undoubtedly profuse correspondence have survived. Two letters have come down to us from 1935, one she wrote to Dr. Plinio and the other a few days later to Dona Rosé. Prata, 29th of May, 1935. Beloved filial, thanks be to God and to the Blessed Virgin, we had an excellent trip, and here I am, a bit tired and shivering with cold. The day was beautiful, but I never thought it could be so cold here. Dinner was quite good. The food is simple, but good at least today. As soon as I arrived, I told the manager that it was only force of habit that brought me to the Sao Paulo Hotel, because I had heard that the food was very bad, and I feared that if it really were, I would not be able to bear it. He got extremely uncomfortable and assured me that I would be served as well as local conditions permitted. Tomorrow I will begin the regimen of the Pio Waters, and I ardently ask God that I will improve a lot. With my blessings and many kisses and hugs from your devoted mother, Lucilia. Did my letter to your father arrive? In the letter to her daughter, besides addressing household concerns, a question for Dr. Martino, and so forth, Dona Lucilia unpretentiously refers to the esteem shown her by a Belgian lady staying at the same hotel. Perhaps this woman, due to her mentality and manner, had been slow in adopting the Hollywood spirit and was therefore captivated by Dona Lucilia's pleasant conversation and welcoming demeanor. Prata, 4th of June, 1935. Beloved daughter, I had the pleasure of receiving your letter the day before yesterday, and thought it odd that you did not allude to a postcard that I had written you the day after I sent you the letter asking you for details about my return ticket, because the conductor kept the ticket I had, saying that it was only a one-way ticket and that for the return I needed to acquire, that is, buy another one. Could ex-printer possibly be taking advantage of us in this way, or am I mistaken and it is really necessary to buy others? I ask you to let me know whatever you can about this. I ask you to also tell Mortino that for the last 2 days my hands have frequently fallen asleep, and see if he thinks this could be due to the baths, which I find so agreeable and which are said to be good for improving one's circulation. I would really regret having to stop taking them. I am now starting to feel the good effects of the pile water. Your father still has not written me since he has been there. I await him daily. How is my little darling? I miss her so much. Here at the hotel, there is an extremely intelligent Belgian lady, but despite that, a little toqué, whose conversation is very interesting, and which I find very diverting but also a bit tiring, for she does not want to leave me be. She even drops into my room and does not leave. Her conversation is outstanding, and I know you would really enjoy hearing her tell of her countless and interesting trips. As I listen to her, I always think of you, especially when she speaks of Russia. She lives in Argentina and only came to make a stop in Caldas, and then in Prata. She's about my age or a little older, but she is bubbling with life. Her husband and children stayed behind, but it seems that even so, she adores her children. She has 5, 3 big boys and 2 little ones. Half of the people have already left. We are only 9 now, and a few days from now, another group leaves. When my Belgian's turn comes, I will really miss her. And you, my dear, how is your health? And does Antonio have another good business deal in sight? Give him a hug for me. And how is my house and household? I am already missing you all and my little home very much. With my blessing for all 3, I send you many kisses and hugs from your devoted mother, Lucilia. A duty of charity, consoling the afflicted. As we have seen, Donna Lucilia sought to instill in her children the practice of doing good to one's neighbor, especially those closest to them. Even when they had reached adulthood, she reminded them of this obligation whenever necessary. Spurred on by charity, she was always concerned about comforting acquaintances who had lost a relative or a friend. An example of this is a note she left her Dr. Plinio one day. Plinio, the 7th day mass for Dr. X will be celebrated in St. Ifigenia Church at 9 o'clock today. You need to go because I esteem his brother-in-law, Y, very much. And being also a relative to Dr. Z, you must not miss it. And that is why I ask you to go. Another example of her attentiveness to family obligation is to reveal in an exchange of letters in June of 1937, when Donna Lucilia was again in Aguas de Prata, accompanied by her husband. In a letter to his father, Dr. Plinio gives a lengthy justification for not having been able to meet with the Correo de Oliveira despite the urgings of Dr. João Paulo and Donna Lucilia. São Paulo, 28th of June, 1937. Papa, I received your letter. Unfortunately, the Correo de Oliveira left very unexpectedly for Santos, and from there to Rio on the day of your departure, or the day after, if I am not mistaken, so there was no time to go visit him. The arguments you and mother adduced in this regard are all perfectly reasonable, and made me even consider it my duty to go to the Esplanada to greet the Correo de Oliveira. I had even thought of returning if I did not find him, but you see, that was not possible. Dr. Plinio continues the letter by detailing some legal matters that Dr. João Paulo had left pending in São Paulo that would oblige him to return earlier than he expected. so that Dona Lucilia would not have to stay alone. Dr. Plinio suggests that Maria Alice the Nine go to stay with her. At the close of the letter, he lightheartedly refers to a trait shared by the maternal and paternal sides of his family, the art of good conversation. Since one side was from Sao Paulo and the other from Pernambuco, each developed this quality in very different ways. How is the weather there, and how are you? Are you taking advantage of the rest? Is there anyone interesting to speak with there, etc.? Of course, for you, conversation, especially with strangers, is far from being a prime necessity, as it is for mother, for me, and for all of us who have a bit of Ribeiro de Santos blood. Missing you and sending you a hug, your son and friend asks for your blessing. Plinio. As the years went by and Dona Lucilia entered old age, her son's concern for her deepened. This would lessen the weight of isolation that she endured for refusing to bend in adapting to the innovations of modernity in order to gain worldly acceptance. He frequently invited some of his best friends from the Legionario group to dine at her home to bring her a little entertainment. Writing to his mother also on June 28, from the Legionario offices, where he often worked long into the night, Dr. Plinio mentions two letters he received, one from a fellow militant and a regular diner at Dona Lucilia's home, who mentions how enjoyable he found her company. Dr. Plinio also reassures her that he is fulfilling his family obligations, some of which he highlights with capital letters, time and again. Dona Lucilia had counseled that he be of service to Dona Rosé even after she married. He carried out her wish until the last day of his sister's life. Sao Paulo, 28th of June, 1937. Beloved Maizina of my heart, I received your telegram and your letter with much pleasure. I confess that I forgot to give Anna the messages about the windows, etc., etc. If I remember, I will give them. I cannot promise to give them if I don't remember. I entrench myself behind this sophism and pass on to another subject. I received two letters from Jose Gustavo over two consecutive days. The first I received was sent from Perugia, if I am not mistaken. The second came from on board the Neptunia, the ship he took. What a muddle! Both letters were very affectionate. One included special mention of you and the leisurely Sunday dinners, which he asks me to tell you that he does not forget, not even on the way to Europe. Yesterday I had lunch with Aunt Yaya, then I went to Zito's house to wish him a happy birthday. To get there I walked the whole distance between Augusta Street and Brigadeiro Luis Antonio on Brazil Avenue, because I did not know the way very well. I have frequently dined with Rosé, and today she is coming to the house. Yesterday we dined at the Caverna. Then we went for a car ride in an excellent Packard. At 11:30 a.m. we parked at the Trianon, where we had a snack. Then we went home. I may possibly spend a few days in Santo Amaro or in Santos, but this is still up in the air. Send me detailed news of your health, what you are doing, what you are not doing, etc. Maria Alice should be there on the 2nd, so if Papa leaves on the 1st, you will only have to spend one night alone. She cannot travel sooner because her clothes are not ready, or something like that. I have the feeling that Maria Alice is very lonely, and not only her. With many and most affectionate kisses, your dear son requests your blessing. Plinio. Hearing some days later that Dona Lucilia had fallen ill, Dr. Plinio writes her another letter, despite his numerous occupations. My Zina of my heart, quickly at 12:40 a.m., I write you a few lines to tell you how sad I am that you have fallen ill there, and how much I desire your prompt recovery. I have just finished praying to Our Lady, asking that everything there go as smoothly as possible. There is nothing new here. On Aunt Celie's birthday, she invited Rosé and me to have lunch with her at the Caverna. I had dinner at Rosé's house, and after spending the whole day on the road, I now retire exhausted, making an effort to be able to write to you. I hope the rosy bearer of this letter will alleviate your saudades a bit, because I have the pretentious illusion of being irreplaceable. And while it is pretentious, I believe that this illusion is not very from reality. Yesterday, VASP invited me, a director of Legionario, to fly to Rio and back today for free. It was a trip for journalists. I declined and appointed a representative, and for this I deserve my Maizina's warmest approval. This evening I was with the young man that went. Just imagine, he left at 8, arrived at 9:30, headed back, I believe, at 2:30, and arrived at 4. In other words, he went to Rio for lunch and returned. Back in the days when Grandpa Gabriel made this trip on a donkey, just think of his astonishment if he were to imagine that his great-grandson could go to Rio and back on the same day. Well, my beloved Maizina, get much better, spend your time well, pray a lot for me, and be very careful with your health. Your respectful son requests your blessing with much affection and sends you 1,000 kisses. Plinio. Note that I am typing my signature because it is easier. Considering who the bearer of the letter is, I believe you will not doubt its authenticity. The Visit of a Japanese Admiral. Having assumed the directorship of Legionario, Dr. Plinio systematically began expanding its coverage and depth of content. From a 2-page biweekly parish pamphlet, it became an in-depth 8-page weekly of international scope, the semi-official organ of the eminent Archdiocese of São Paulo. It became a point of honor for important Catholic figures passing through São Paulo to pay a visit to its offices. In 1938, the famous Admiral Yamamoto was in São Paulo, the veteran of numerous battles on the far eastern seas and an outstanding Catholic leader in Japan. Upon arrival in São Paulo, he got in touch with Dr. Plinio and Legionario. As a way of returning the kindness of this visit, Dr. Plinio invited him to dinner at his home, certain that Donna Lucilia would be very pleased to receive him. Donna Lucilia, in turn, expressed the desire that Donna Rosé also attend, for her brilliant and sparkling conversation would help in living the evening. Admiral Yamamoto was descended from the samurai, a noble class of the Empire of the Rising Sun, and a man of true refinement and culture with qualities that contributed to a distinctive personality, profoundly marked by Catholicism, yet very different from the Western manner. Accompanied by high-ranking official of the Japanese consulate in São Paulo, the illustrious guest arrived at the house in military punctuality. Donna Lucilia welcomed him with the amiability of the ladies of Old Paulista society. The conversation, in French, unfolded spontaneously, touching on the religious, military, and social events in the admiral's life. Since he had been involved in numerous naval engagements, he was easily prompted to speak of some of the feats that gave him a just claim to glory. As soon as the subject was raised, his enigmatic, almond-shaped eyes lit up in his otherwise impassive countenance. Ah, battles, they are a very beautiful thing. Dr. Plinio amiably asked, Admiral, you were involved in several naval battles, were you not? Yes, innumerable. Would it tire you to describe what was for you the culminating episode, the most beautiful, the most critical incident of the wars in which you participated? Dr. Plinio proposed. Seeing his host's sincere interest, the admiral felt right at home. He had given himself body and soul to the military profession and was especially attuned to its glorious aspect. Of course, Professor, it would be my pleasure, he answered. Under the sway of military ardor, The visitor did not seem to realize that Dona Lucilia's tastes were not quite along this line. While she would consent to sacrificing her own son in a fight to defend the church, she could not but pity the many lives taken in wars devoid of religious significance. A feeling of suspense settled over the dining room, but out of consideration for the guests, no one intervened as it continued. It was during the Battle of Tsushima during the Russo-Japanese War in 1905 when we sank the great Russian warship Tsarevich. But how did this come about? Asked Dr. Plinio. Ah, you cannot imagine how wonderful it was. The battleship was one of the world's most equipped, the pride of the Russian Navy, and the flagship of the fleet we were fighting. The battle was fierce. Dozens of ships sank. The more he spoke, the more serious and distressed Dona Lucilia became. Oblivious to her reaction, the admiral coolly and cheerfully proceeded. That enormous battleship passed right in front of the ship I was commanding, in such a way that we could not pass up the opportunity. Our shots were right on mark. After we bombarded it, it capsized. The stern began to sink and the bow to rise out of the water and point skyward. We saw it almost fully vertical. Dona Lucilia was following the story closely and mourned the awful plight of the mariners about to be swallowed by the sea. Afflicted, she inquired, "And what happened then?" The admiral enthusiastically replied, "My lady, it went straight to the bottom." "Ah!" exclaimed Dona Lucilia with a slight start. While this subject had enthused the heroic fighter, he became positively fired up when Dr. Plinio led the conversation to the internal doctrinal fight then raging in all Catholic circles. What would he have to say? As he described the symptoms of indiscipline and disloyalty of the Catholic circles of his own country, the high-ranking army officer burned with indignation. He stood up, flushed with excitement, and started to speak loudly. And of course, everyone gave him the floor. Eventually, he calmed down and passed naturally on to another topic. After dinner, Admiral Yamamoto bid a courteous farewell to Dona Lucilia, of whom he would certainly bring home memories to his distant land as a distinguished and affable lady. Years later, when Dona Lucilia learned of his death, she was deeply saddened and prayed fervently for his eternal repose. Japan had lost a valiant warrior, and the church, moreover, a fearless militant. Salve Maria.